As Kizzy and Jenks fawned over the ludicrous assortment of weaponry, Ashby and Sissix perused the shields. All misgivings that Ashby had about buying modern equipment vanished as Nib spoke to them about his tech. Nib already had the Wayfarer's specs on hand, but he wanted to know more than just engine readouts and hull dimensions. He wanted details. He wanted to know how old the ship was, what it was built from, if the materials used in the living quarters differed from the original framework. He wanted to know the specific strain of algae they used for fuel and how much ambi they kept on board at a time. Ashby cringed inwardly at the reminder of the stolen cells. The GC was covering the loss, but still, it was an awful waste. Nib asked Sissix careful questions about her piloting techniques and nodded with sincere consideration as she answered. Bear joined the conversation after a time, and the brothers debated shield mechanics with enthusiasm. In the end, Bear and Nib decided they would take apart several existing models and combine the components into something specially suited to the Wayfarer. Ashby felt as though he were buying a tailored set of clothes. These modders were no mere techs. They were artists. And for all they were offering, they required only a day's work and a sum of credits that Ashby suspected covered little more than the components themselves. Ashby made a mental note to thank Kizzy for being friends with these people. He turned around to see Jenks hand Rosemary a small energy pistol. The weapon looked out of place in her hands, like a fish being held by a desert-born Andrisk. "See? Not so scary when you're the one holding it," Jenks said. Rosemary didn't look too sure. Bear beamed.
"Want to take it for a spin?"
Rosemary swallowed. "I don't know how to shoot."
"We can teach you," Bear said. "Easy peasy. You don't need to know anything fancy."
"And it's fun,"
said a voice behind them. Ember, covered in green slime, kettling head in hand, walked into the cargo hold and began digging through a pile of metal support poles. She clutched the kettling's head by the antennae, holding it up to one pole at a time, trying to find a good width for skewering.
"Ember," said Nib, "please tell me that you did not leave a butchered kettling lying out in the sun."
"Meat's in the Stacy," she said.
Bear gave her a knowing look.
"Please tell me that you did not leave a pile of guts lying out in the sun."
Their little sister set down the pole she had in hand, flashed a guilty smile, and tiptoed in an exaggerated fashion back out of the cargo bay. Bear rolled his eyes to the ceiling with a sigh.
"I cannot wait for her to stop being a teenager."
"I can," Nib said. "Do you know how impossible it's going to be to boss her around when she's 20?
"Question for you," Sissix said. "Totally unrelated."
"Go for it."
"One of our rotational stabilizers was damaged when the Acherax hit us. We were going to pick up a replacement on our next market stop, but I hate flying without it for that long. You guys don't carry anything like that, right?"
"We don't, but we're hardly the only techs on this rock. You should talk to Jess and Mikey," said Bear.
"The same Mikey with the AI scam?"
"The same, but don't hold that against him. Those two really know their shit. Old school ship techs. Retired now, but they still spend lots of time in their workshop. Awesome folks. They live about an hour from here. If you like, I can call down and see if they're in. You could borrow a skiff and be there and back by dinner time."
Ashby looked to Sissix. She nodded.
"Might as well, as long as we're here," he said.
He turned back to the brothers.
"You sure you don't mind us using a skiff?"
"Nah, no worries. If you guys can punch holes through space, I trust you to bring my skiff back in one piece."
"Hey!" Ember yelled from outside. "Anyone want to see what a Kettling nervous column looks like?"
"No,"
yelled Bear.
"No, they do not," yelled Nib.
"Yeah, kind of,"
Jenks said. He dashed outside, dragging Kizzy with him. Nib gave Ashby an apologetic shrug.
"Sorry for the chaos," he said.
"That's okay," Ashby said.
Outside the cargo hold, Kizzy and Jenks were making disgusted, delighted sounds.
"I'm kind of used to it."
Rosemary had the sense that Ember knew a lot more about life than she did. But the girl had been wrong about one thing. The swarm didn't wait a few days. An hour or so after Bear put the butchered, basted Ketling over the fire, its kin erupted from the crags with a fury. The sky was darkened within minutes. At a distance, the twitching clouds of insects looked almost like clusters of malfunctioning pixels. The Ketlings darted madly across the skies they fertilized, killed, and sometimes ate one another. There had been a quick succession of bright flashes across the skyline as the people of Cricket activated the shields around their homes. The Ketlings rammed headfirst into the shields, though they did not do so for any obvious reason. They did the same to rocks, plants, abandoned vehicles, even other Ketlings. It seemed that the bugs disliked anything that infringed upon their ability to move in whichever direction they pleased. Ashby and Sissix had still been at the other compound when the swarm hit. Rosemary had checked in with them via her Scribs vidlink. None of them had any choice but to spend the night as unplanned house guests. Neither of their hosts seemed to mind. On the contrary, it seemed that Jess and Mikey were only too happy to entertain some off-worlders. Ashby said that they had been pulling stashed delicacies out of cupboards left and right, and after Sissix had learned that the old couple spoke a little Riskitkish, they had become instant friends. Rosemary heard the women talking in the background over the vidlink, Sissix going slow, Jess pushing doggedly through the hissing syllables. From their laughter, Rosemary gathered that the conversation was a good one. The Modder siblings were similarly delighted.
"There's nothing you can do about a swarm," Nib said. "It just means we get a day or two more with our friends."
The brothers were treating the miasma of biting, thrashing, spawn-vomiting insects as if it were a holiday. Ember and Kizzy lugged a case of home-brewed kick up from the cellar. Like most things on Cricket, it had been made by a neighbor. Bear roasted Ember's prey beneath the safety of the shield. It was an odd tableau. An apron-clad man brushing marinade onto a spit roast while slavering beasts bounced furiously off the crackling bubble of energy above him. The bugs were undeterred by the piked Ketling head, standing tall beside the entry gate. At first, Rosemary felt uncomfortable being stuck in the Modder's home, and not just for the swarm outside. Kizzy and Jenks were good friends with this family, but Rosemary was the odd one out. The thought of imposing on these strangers for a day or two, eating their food, sleeping on a grubby couch, listening to inside jokes, left Rosemary awkward. But the siblings' congeniality did away with those feelings. Bear, in particular, made an effort to include her, and attempted to fill her in when the story started going over her head. Most of the stories fell into one of two groups. The time we built this amazing thing, or the time we smoked too much smash and did something stupid. Once she had gotten past the memory of the oozing Ketling carcass, she found the shreds of spicy, flame-licked insect, wrapped in airy flatbread and washed down with crisp kick, actually made for an enjoyable meal. By the time dinner was over, Rosemary found herself unexpectedly at ease. The armchair she sat in was dusty and worn. The pixel plant flickering nearby smacked of poor taste. The enthusiastic chatter about tech and modding was impossible for her to contribute to. But unfamiliar as everything was, it was clear that her companions felt right at home. Belly full and body laughing, Rosemary could pretend that she fit in there, too. Nib brought out a fresh pot of mech to his house guests and siblings, all of whom were situated around the pixel projector. Bear sat on the floor with his back against a couch. Kizzy sat behind him, putting tiny braids in his thick mane of hair. Jenks lounged nearby, smoking red reed and looking content. Ember sat at the workbench, frowning as she fussed with a circuit panel.
"You know," the girl said as her brother entered the room, "there's a way for this project to go way faster."
"Really?" said Nib, his voice flat. He looked to Rosemary, raising the pot and his eyebrows in tandem.
"Mech?"
"Yes, please,"
Rosemary said. A soothing cup of mech on a full stomach sounded perfect. It was almost enough to make her forget about the muffled droning coming through the outer walls.
Seriously, said Ember, these junction pins are so hard to see. If I had...
Bear glanced up. If it starts with O and ends with Cular implant, the answer is no.
Stop moving, Teddy, Kizzy said. You're going to end up with messy braids.
Ember sighed with the long, suffering wariness of a teenager. Hypocrites. When you've stopped growing and your brain chemistry has evened out, you can get all the implants you want, said Nib. His tone was parental. It seemed to irritate Ember all the more. Hate to be the bad guy, but your brother's right, Jenks said. Put implants in too early and you'll wind up a mess. I knew a dude who got a head jack when he was 15. As he grew, his spine stretched and the interface got all fucked up. Had to go back and get it done all over again. The hack job idiot working on him didn't know what he was doing, and the poor kid wound up with an infection in his spinal cord. Almost killed him. Had to get all four limbs replaced just so he could move again. Who the fuck puts a head jack in a kid that age? Bear said.
Stop. Moving.
Kizzy said. Bear grumbled. Ember, seriously, if you ever meet a modder who will implant teenagers, run like hell. Modding isn't just about getting sewn up with cool tech. It's about orchestrating a balance between the synthetic and the organic. If you don't care about the well-being of the organic, then ow! He yelped as Kizzy pulled his hair.
Stop. Moving!
I know, Ember said to Bear. Spare me the platitudes.
You are too young for a word like platitudes, Jenks said.
Ember stuck her tongue out at him. He returned the gesture. Besides, sweetie, Kizzy said, you've got such pretty eyes. Why get a full implant when you could just wear a HUD?
He's got a full implant, Ember said, pointing at Nib.
He also had an incident, Jenks said. He pantomimed firing a gun at his own face and made an explosion gesture over his eye. Red Reed's smoke burst from his nose as he laughed.
I'm so glad you're staying over, Nib said.
Jenks raised his mug in a jaunty salute. Nib glanced at the clock on the wall.
News should be uploaded by now. Anyone mind if I put it on? He said.
There was a general shaking of heads.
Nib is something of a junkie when it comes to current events, Bear said to Rosemary. Or past events, or just events in general, really.
He's a reference file archivist, Kizzy said.
No kidding, said Rosemary. Volunteer? Nib nodded.
Some people knit, some people play music. I dig through dusty old facts and make sure they're accurate.
He flopped back into a chair as the pixels in the central projector flickered to life.
I like knowing things.
Rosemary was impressed. Archivists were passionate people, some of whom dedicated their whole lives to the pursuit of unbiased truth. Given the wealth of information that needed sorting through, professional archivists relied heavily upon volunteers to help keep public files current. Rosemary had always imagined them like guardians from some fantasy vid, defending the galaxy from inaccuracies and questionable data.
What are you working on, if I may ask? Rosemary said. I belong to one of the interspecies history teams. It's fascinating work, but it can be a real pain in the ass. You would not believe the amount of bogus, specious submissions we have to deal with.
Examples, Kizzy said. Nib sighed and scratched his beard.
The best one I've seen in a while claimed that the Exodus fleet could never have sustained that many people for so long, ergo the human race did not originate on Earth at all.
Jenks raised his head.
So where are we from, then?
Nib grinned.
We're a gene-tweaked species the Hermogians cooked up.
Jenks hooted with laughter.
Oh, my mom would have a coronary if she read that.
That's so dumb, said Ember. What about all the earth in ruins and stuff? All those old cities?
I know, Nib said with a shrug. But we still have to go through the process of objectively disproving the claim. That's our job.
Why would people go to all the trouble of trying to prove something like that? Kizzy asked.
Because they're idiots, said Bear.
And speaking of, the news has started.
Nib gestured to the pixels, bringing the volume up. A pixelated Quinn Stevens spoke from his desk, as always. Rosemary had never followed Exodon news feeds before coming aboard the Wayfarer, but she'd picked up the habit from Ashby. It was a comfort knowing that no matter what system you were in, Quinn was there to bring you the news. The pixels flickered with signal decay. They were a long way from the fleet. The newsman's voice came through.
News from Mars, the trial that has been dubbed the scandal of the century, finally came to a close today with the sentencing of former Phobos Fuel CEO Quentin Harris III.
Rosemary's warm, comfortable feeling disappeared with a thud.
Oh, no.
She dug her fingers into the folds of her trousers, trying to keep her face emotionless as the newsman spoke.
Harris was found guilty of all charges, including extortion, fraud, smuggling, and crimes against sapient kind.
Breathe. Don't think about it. Think about the bugs outside. Think about anything.
Damn right he was found guilty, said Jenks. What an asshole.
Who?
Asked Bear, raising his chin.
Head down, mumbled Kizzy, holding several hair ties between her teeth.
The Phobos guy, said Nib. The one who sold weapons to the Taremi?
Oh, right,
Bear said.
That asshole.
I don't know who we're talking about, Ember said.
Ever heard of Phobos Fuel, big Ambi distributor?
Second biggest in human space, Rosemary thought.
I guess, said Ember.
Bear pointed at the pixels.
Well, the dude who owned the company apparently had an illegal weapons business on the side. That's where his real creds came from.
You've got illegal weapons.
Nib crossed his arms.
Ember, there is an enormous difference between making weapons for fun and selling gene targeters to both sides of an interstellar blood feud.
Ember raised her eyebrows.
Gene targeters? Wow. That's fucked up.
Yep, Bear said. And now he and his buddies are going to jail forever.
Jenks shook his head.
Why can't people just stick with bullets and energy bursts and be happy about it?
Because people are assholes, said Bear, dutifully keeping his head down. 90% of all problems are caused by people being assholes.
What causes the other 10%? Asked Kizzy.
Natural disasters, said Nib.
The projector showed a cuffed and humiliated Quentin Harris III as he was marched from the courthouse to a police skimmer. His face was unreadable. His suit immaculately stitched. Angry protesters pressed against the energy barriers that surrounded the courthouse. Cheap printed signs danced over their heads.
There is blood on your hands, read one.
Another held a pixel insert of a bloodied Taremi carrying a mangled corpse. Below the insert was the Phobos slogan, keeping the galaxy moving. Other signs were more simple. Warmonger. Traitor. Murderer. The barriers holding them back bulged like overfilled pockets. The reporter continued his calm tale of biological warfare and greed. Rosemary focused all her energy toward her eyes.
Do not cry. Don't cry. You can't.
Rosemary, are you okay?
Jenks asked. Rosemary wasn't sure how she replied. Something about being fine and just needing some air. She excused herself, walked steadily down the hall, and exited the homestead. Outside, the Kettlings continued their chaotic dance. The sun was setting behind them, transforming the scene into a macabre shadow puppet show. Rosemary was unfazed. The Kettlings did not feel real. The homestead, the siblings, the moon beneath her feet. None of it felt real. All she could think of was that pixelated face on the projector, the face she had traveled across the galaxy to get away from. She tried to breathe slow, tried to fight back the raw, smothering feeling blossoming within her chest. She sat down in the dirt and stared at her hands. She gritted her teeth. Everything she'd worked so hard to bottle up when she left Mars was bubbling up. And she wasn't sure she could push it back down this time. She had to, though. She had to.
Rosemary?
Rosemary jumped.
It was Jenks standing beside her. She hadn't heard the door or his footsteps. She barely heard the Ketlings droning overhead. What's wrong? His hands were in his pockets, his eyebrows knitted together. As she looked him in the eye, something within her broke. She knew it might cost her the goodwill of the crew and her place on the Wayfarer, but she couldn't do it anymore. She couldn't keep up the lie any longer. Rosemary looked away, out past the Ketlings, across the rocky crags, all the way to the unfamiliar sun. Its light seared into her eyes and remained there, heavy and orange, even as she closed them. Jenks, I haven't been... Stars, you're all going to hate me for this. They would, and Ashby would fire her, and Sissix would never talk to her again. Doubtful, Jenks said. We like you a lot. He sat down next to her and hit the bowl of his pipe against his boot. The tightly packed ash came loose and tumbled to the ground. But you don't know. I can't do this. She leaned her forehead into her palm. I know I'm going to get kicked off the ship, but... Jank stopped fussing with his pipe. Okay, now you have to tell me, he said, his voice stern but calm. Take all the time you need, but you're telling me. She took a breath. That guy on the news? She said. Quentin Harris?
Yeah?
He's my father. Jenks said nothing. He exhaled. Holy shit! Oh, Rosemary, Wow, I'm so sorry. He paused again. Shit, I had no idea. That was the point. Nobody was supposed to know. I shouldn't even be here. I'm not... I lied, Jenks. I lied and cheated and covered things up, but I just can't do this anymore. I can't. Whoa, hey, slow down. One thing at a time. He sat quiet, thinking. Rosemary, I have to ask, and you have to tell me the truth, okay?
Okay.
His jaw was firm, his eyes wary. Were you involved in what he did? I mean, even just a little bit? Doctoring forms or lying to the police or something? No. It was the truth. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything until the detectives appeared at my apartment and spent the morning asking me questions. They knew I had nothing to do with it, and they told me I was under no obligation to be involved with the trial. I didn't even have to stay on Mars. He searched her face and nodded. So, okay. He laughed. Stars, that's a relief. I thought I was going to hate you there for a minute. He patted her leg. All right, you're innocent, so? He looked baffled. Rosemary, sorry, but what the fuck is the problem here? She was shocked still. What? I mean, okay, I get that you're going through a lot right now, and by a lot, I mean some serious emotional shit that's going to take us dozens of bottles of kick to work through, but why lie about it? If you're not involved, then why would you think we'd care? Rosemary was unprepared for this. Months and months of worrying and dreading. And he didn't care? You don't understand. Back on Mars, it didn't matter that I hadn't done anything. Everyone knew who I was. All the news feeds, it was nothing but our family history. Even holiday pics and things like that. All focused on my father, of course. But there's little me, smiling and waving at his side. I don't even know how they got that stuff. And it was all paired up with medical experts talking about what targeters do to you and all those news people yelling about corruption. You know the feeds. They never stop once they get their claws in. My friends stopped talking to me. People would yell things at me out in public. Hey, your dad's a murderer, as if I didn't know what he'd done. I'd been applying for jobs at the time, and nobody called me back. Nobody wanted my family's name associated with their business. But your name's Harper, Jenks said. She pressed her lips together. What would you do if you wanted to get away? I mean, really get away, so that nobody knew who you'd been before. Jenks thought. He gave a slow nod. Oh, I think I get it. He reached out his hand. Let's see it. See what? Your patch.
Rosemary hesitantly laid her right wrist in his palm. She pushed up her wrist wrap, exposing the patch beneath. Jenks leaned in, studying it closely.
"This is fucking amazing work," he said at last.
"The only way you can tell it's new is by how it healed. If I didn't know better, I'd say this was a genuine replacement for a fried patch."
"That's because it is a genuine replacement," Rosemary said.
She swallowed. Her tongue felt thick. Jenks was puzzled.
"How did you get—"
His face lit up.
"Phobos fuel. Right, you've got money. Serious money."
"I had money. Before you paid someone off. Paid someone to give you a new ID file."
"Shit, Rosemary, you must have paid them a fortune not to talk."
"Everything I had," she said. "Except for transport and hotels, that sort of thing." She laughed without smiling. "My family may not have taught me much about the galaxy, but buying favors, we've got that down."
"But you're really a clerk, right? Like, you know your way around form work. You obviously went to school. That's all true, right?"
She nodded. "The official who helped me, he changed all my records, made sure my new file was linked to everywhere I'd ever been. So my diploma, my certification, my letters of recommendation, they're all mine. The only way anybody would find out that the associated ID file had been altered was if, say, one of my crewmates went to Mars and asked one of my friends about me. I figured finding work out in the open limited the chances of running into anybody from back home. So I put my name on the list for long-haul work, and here I am."
Jenks rubbed his beard. "So then what's wrong? If you did the coursework and you have the skills, you deserve to have this job. Why would we throw you off the ship?"
"Because I lied, Jenks. I lied to Ashby when I told him who I was. I've been lying to all of you every time you've asked me about my life back on Mars. I came into your home and told you lie after lie about who I am."
"Rosemary."
Jenks put his hand on her shoulder.
"I'm not going to insult you by pretending like I get what you're dealing with. Someone in my family did something like this. Stars. I don't know what I'd do. I can't offer advice here, but if you ever need a shoulder to cry on, mine's good and ready. As for who you are, and your name really is Rosemary, right?
Okay."
He nodded back toward the homestead.
"Do you know why human modders give themselves weird names?"
She shook her head.
"It's a really old practice, goes back to pre-collapse computer networks. We're talking old tech here. People would choose names for themselves that they only used within a network. Sometimes that name became so much a part of who they were that even their friends out in the real world started using it. For some folks, those names became their whole identity. Their true identity, even. Now, modders don't care about anything as much as individual freedom. They say that nobody can define you but you. So when Bear gave himself a new arm, he didn't do it because he didn't like the body he was born in, but because he felt that new arm fit him better. Tweaking your body, it's all about trying to make your physical self fit with who you are inside. Not that you have to tweak to get that feeling. Like me, I like to decorate myself, but my body already fits with who I am. But some modders, they'll keep changing themselves their entire lives, and it doesn't always work out. Sometimes they seriously mess themselves up. But that's the risk you take in trying to be more than the little box you're born into. Change is always dangerous." He tapped her arm. "You're Rosemary Harper. You chose that name because the old one didn't fit anymore. So you had to break a few laws to do it. Big fucking deal. Life isn't fair, and laws usually aren't either. You did what you had to do. I get that."
Rosemary bit her lip.
"I still lied to you all."
"Yeah, you did. And you're going to have to fess up. Not to anybody outside the crew, if you don't want to, but the people you live with need to hear it. That's the only way you can make up for it and move on."
Ashby is the most reasonable man I've ever met. Sure, he's not going to be thrilled about it."
He paused for a split second.
Rosemary could see a separate thought flash past his eyes, distracting him. He cleared his throat and came back.
"But you've been kicking ass at your job, and you're a good person. That's going to matter more to him than anything else."
Rosemary looked at her friend and hugged him hard.
Thank you, she said.
Tears flowed down her cheeks. They felt clean. Hey, no worries. We're crew. And you'll get through this, you know. I know you will. He paused. I'm sorry for calling your dad an asshole. Rosemary looked at him with disbelief. Jenks, my father sold biological weapons to both sides of a civil war outside his own species, and all for getting access to the Ambi across their borders. I think calling him an asshole is being generous.
Well, okay, yeah, that's fair.
He rubbed his beard.
Stars, I wish I knew what to say.
When we get back to the ship, you need to talk to Dr. Sheff, one-on-one.
About what?
About his species.
This is the end of the CD. The audiobook continues on the next CD.
Day 251, GC Standard 306, The Last War. There were few things Dr. Sheff enjoyed more than a cup of tea. He made tea for the crew every day at breakfast time, of course, but that involved an impersonal heap of leaves dumped into a clunky dispenser. A solitary cup of tea required more care, a blend carefully chosen to match his day. He found the ritual of it quite calming. Heating the water, measuring the crisp leaves and curls of dried fruit into the tiny basket, gently brushing the excess away with his finger pads, watching color rise through water like smoke as it brewed. Tea was a moody drink. There had been no tea on his home planet. Heated water was only for sleeping in, not for drinking. So many wonderful things they had missed out on, simply because they had never thought to imbibe the stuff. No tea, no soup, no mech. Well, the mech was hardly a loss. He did not share his crewmate's enthusiasm for the murky brew. Something about it reminded him of wet dirt, and not in a pleasant way. He sat on a garden bench in the fishbowl, his tea cooling as he worked through slow thoughts. Rosemary sat across from him, holding her own mug in her bony human hands. She was silent as he thought out loud. He knew how strange they each were to the other. He for never thinking quietly, she for having no thinking sounds. He knew she understood his noise by now, though, and that knowledge made her silence feel companionable. The thoughts he was drumming up were old and safely kept. Kizzy had accused him once of bottling up his feelings, but this was a human concept. The idea that one could hide their feelings away and pretend that they were not there. Dr. Sheff knew exactly where all of his feelings were, every joy, every ache. He didn't need to visit them all at once to know where they were. Humans' preoccupation with being happy was something he had never been able to figure out. No sapient could sustain happiness all of the time, just as no one could live permanently within anger or boredom or grief. Grief. Yes, that was the feeling that Rosemary needed him to find today. He did not run from his grief, nor did he deny its existence. He could study his grief from a distance, like a scientist observing animals. He embraced it, accepted it, acknowledged that it would never go away. It was as much a part of him as any pleasant feeling, perhaps even more so. He cooed readiness and focused on his vocal cords, forcing them to work together as one. He looked into Rosemary's white-rimmed eyes. He began to speak.
Our species are very different from each other. You have two hands. I have six. You sleep in a bed. I sleep in a tub. You like mech. I don't. Many little differences. But there's one big thing that Grom and humans have in common, and that is our capacity for cruelty. Which is not to say we are bad at the core. I think both of our species have good intentions, but when left to our passions, we have it within ourselves to do despicable things. The only reason humans stopped killing each other to the extent that you used to, I think, is because your planet died before you could finish the job. My species was not so lucky. The reason you haven't seen any other Grom is because there are only some 300 of us left.
Rosemary's hand went to her mouth.
I'm sorry, she said.
Such a quintessentially human thing, to express sorrow through apology.
I'm not, Dr. Scheff said. It was our own doing. Our extinction wasn't caused by a natural disaster or the slow crawl of evolution. We killed ourselves.
He thought aloud for a moment, sorting out all the pieces.
For generations, my species was at a war with itself. I couldn't even tell you why. Oh, there are historians with all sorts of theories and ideas. But it's the same story you hear everywhere. Different beliefs, different cultures, territories everyone wanted. I was born into that war. And when I was ready, I took my place in it as a doctor.
I wasn't the sort of doctor I am now. I didn't become friends with my patients. I didn't have long chats with them about their diets or what sort of immubots they should upgrade to. My job was to patch up dying soldiers as fast as I could, so that they could get back out there and keep killing. Near the end, the outsiders, that's roughly what we called the others, started using these projectiles called.
He hummed in thought, trying to find an analog and clip.
Organ cutters. You see, the outsiders had been separated from us, from my faction for so long that they had become genetically distinct. The organ cutters were programmed to hone in on our genetic markers. If they hit an outsider by mistake, it'd hurt them, but it was nothing worse than an ordinary bullet wound. But if an organ cutter hit one of us, that triggered its real purpose.
Which was, Rosemary said, looking fearful. He looked out the window, but he did not see the stars.
To burrow. A cutter would dig through a person's insides until it hit something vital. It wouldn't stop until the victim was dead. So, say a soldier took a hit to a limb. With a normal bullet, that'd be a minor wound. But with a cutter, they'd be dead within, half an hour. And half an hour may not sound like much time, but when you've got a little piece of metal ripping through you.
The memories reached out to Dr. Scheff, trying to pull him away from his safe observation point. They tugged, begged for him to give in, but he would not. He was not a prisoner of those memories. He was their warden.
Day after day, they'd bring me soldiers with live cutters still burrowing, and it was up to me to chase them down. I was often too slow. All the doctors were. See, the cutters emitted a type of interference that made them invisible to our scanners. We had to go looking by hand. In the end, we found it faster and more merciful to euthanize cutter patients on the spot.
He sucked in his cheeks in disgust. Remembering mess after bloody, shrieking mess.
I hated the outsiders for the cutters. More than hated them. It was ugly, the feeling within me. I thought that the outsiders were animals, monsters, something lesser than me. Yes, lesser. I truly believed that we were better than them, that despite all the blood on our faces, at least we had not stooped that low. But you can already guess what happened next, right?
Your side started using cutters, too?
Yes, but it was worse than that. I learned that cutters had been our tech to start with. The outsiders had just stolen the idea before we could complete it. They had only done to us what we had planned to do to them. That was the moment in which I no longer knew who the animals were. I no longer wanted to mend our soldiers so they could go use cutters and...
He searched for serviceable words.
Sticky fire and germ bombs. I wanted to heal them, actually heal them. Sometimes I'd see a body added to the pile, someone I had just put back on her feet a few days earlier. It made me wonder what the point of it all was.
He stopped and rumbled in thought for a long, long time. The thought he was arriving at grasped and clung, but he remained in control.
One night, one of the other doctors ran into my shelter.
She told me to come quickly. I followed her to the surgery, and there, ripped to pieces by a cutter, by our tech, was my youngest mothered child, my daughter. I hadn't even known she was fighting nearby.
Oh, no, Rosemary said. Her voice was soft as leaves.
Dr. Sheff wiggled his head up and down, the human gesture for yes. They had given her drugs to block the pain and were preparing the, I don't know what to call it, an injection. The last one we gave to cutter patients. An injection to stop her heart. I shoved the doctor working on her aside. I held her face. She was barely there behind her eyes, but I think she knew who I was. I told her I loved her and that the pain would be gone soon. I gave her the injection myself. I knew it was the right thing to do, that I be the one to take her back out of the world I had brought her into. She was the last of my children. There had been five of them, all beautiful, gray-speckled girls. And they all became soldiers, as most of our girls did. They died on scorched battlefields far from home. None of my children ever mothered. None of them ever became male. My last child, I didn't love her any more or less than any of the others, but something about knowing that all my children were gone broke me. I couldn't keep my grief at a distance any longer. My thoughts became too big. I had to stop being a doctor. I spent the rest of the war in a quiet home, a place of rest, learning how to steady my mind again. Dr. Sheff, Rosemary shook her head from side to side. Her face was wet. I can't imagine.
That's good, he said. I wouldn't want you to.
A few years later, there were too few daughters on either side for anyone to keep fighting. The germ bombs had mutated into things we couldn't cure. Our water was poisoned, our mines and forests had nothing left to give. The war didn't end exactly. It just burned itself out.
Couldn't you rebuild? Find a colony somewhere to start over?
We could have, but we chose not to.
Why?
He hummed, considering the best way to explain. We are an old species, Rosemary. There were Grum long before there were humans. After all we had done, all the horrors we had created, both sides decided that perhaps it was time for us to end. We had squandered our time, and we didn't feel that we needed, or perhaps deserved, another chance. The war ended 30 standards ago, but we kept dying from the diseases we designed, or injuries that came back to haunt us. To my knowledge, there has not been another Grum born in decades. There may be, somewhere, but it will not be enough. Most Grum did what I did. They left. Who wants to stay on a poison world filled with dead daughters? Who wants to be around others of our kind, knowing the things that every one of us had to do? No. No. Better to leave alone and die gracefully.
Rosemary thought in silence. Where did you go?
I traveled out to the nearest spaceport and talked my way aboard a trade ship. Mixed crew. We mostly hopped between Mater rocks and fringe colonies. I earned some credits helping in the kitchen, just cleaning at first, but their cook saw that I had an interest in food and he indulged my desire to learn. Once I had enough money, I left the ship and made a home for myself on Port Coriel. I had a tiny soup shack near one of the family districts. The cook taught me about soup. You see, nothing fancy, but it was fast and cheap and good for you, and merchants in a hurry like food that is fast and cheap and good for you. There was a human doctor who lived in the neighborhood, a man named Drave, and he came by often. I liked him a lot, but I was jealous of his profession. He was a family doctor. He'd seen his patients grow from babies to adults with babies of their own. It sounded like such a joy. To watch people age and help them do it healthily. One day, I was finally brave enough to confess to him that I had been a doctor once,
and that I wanted to use those skills for something good. We made a deal. I could come work with Drave in his clinic for 3 days a 10-day, and he could have free soup whenever he liked. Much better deal for me, I think. So that was my life for 6 standards, making soup, working in the clinic, taking linking courses on alien anatomy. Oh, and herbs. I found out about herbs during that time. Drave was a good friend to me. Still is. We write from time to time. His grandson took over the soup shack for me after I started becoming male. Bad time to be working. Bad time to be doing anything, really. The transition isn't easy. He rumbled. His thoughts were straying from the point. He hummed and burred to get them back. Sometime later, this human named Ashby stopped in the clinic to get his bots upgraded. We talked for a long time, and a few days later, he came back to tell me that he was gathering crew for a tunneling ship and offered me a wonderful job. 2 jobs! I was sad to say goodbye to Drave, but what Ashby had offered was exactly what I needed. There is peace out here in the open. I have friends and a garden in the stars and a kitchen full of tasty things. I heal people now. I cannot pretend that the war never happened, but I stopped fighting it long ago. I did not start that war. It should never have been mine to fight. He sank down so that he could look Rosemary square in the eye. We cannot blame ourselves for the wars our parents start. Sometimes the very best thing we can do is walk away. Rosemary was silent for a long time. The Cutters were horrible, she said. But on some level, I can understand why your people used them. They were at war. They all hated each other. My father is not a soldier. He's never been in a war. He doesn't hate the Taremi. I don't know if he's ever even met one. We had everything on Mars. Everything. He allowed those weapons to be designed and sold. He encouraged it. And for what? More money? How many people are dead because of what he did? How many people's children? Dr. Sheff sat back on 4. As you said, he had everything. That made him feel safe and powerful. People can do terrible things when they feel safe and powerful. Your father had probably gotten his way for so long that he thought he was untouchable, and that is a dangerous way for a person to feel. I don't think anyone on this ship blames you for wanting to get as far away as you could from a person like that. Ashby wasn't exactly pleased. Only about the deception, not about who you are. He glanced back toward the empty kitchen, the empty hallway. And between you and me, he understands. He's not going to hold it against you. But he's also your boss, and sometimes he has to speak in a way that reminds us of that. He hummed, shifting thoughts. In a way, I think you must be feeling much the same way as I did the day that I found out where the Cutters came from. You found something dark within your own house, and you are wondering how much of it has rubbed off on you. Rosemary started to nod, then shook her head. That's not the same. What happened to you, to your species, it doesn't even compare.
Why? Because it's worse?
She nodded.
But it still compares. If you have a fractured bone and I've broken every bone in my body, does that make your fracture go away?
Does it hurt you any less knowing that I am in more pain? No, but that's not...
Yes, it is. Feelings are relative. And at the root, they're all the same. Even if they grow from different experiences and exist on different scales.
He examined her face. She looked skeptical.
Sissix would understand this. You humans really do cripple yourselves with your belief that you all think in unique ways.
He leaned forward.
Your father, the person who raised you, who taught you how the world works, did something unspeakably horrible. And not only did he take part in it, he justified it to himself. When you first learned of what your father had done, did you believe it?
No.
Why not?
I didn't think he was capable of it.
Why not? He obviously was.
He didn't seem like he was. The father I knew never could have done such a thing.
Aha! But he did. So then you begin wondering how you could have been so wrong about him. You start going back through your memories looking for signs. You begin questioning everything you know, even the good things. You wonder how much of it was a lie. And worst of all, since he had a heavy hand in making you who you are, you begin wondering what you yourself are capable of.
Rosemary stared at him.
Yes.
Dr. Sheff bobbed his head up and down.
And this is where our species are very much alike. The truth is, Rosemary, that you are capable of anything, good or bad. You always have been, and you always will be. Given the right push, you too could do horrible things. That darkness exists within all of us.
You think every soldier who picked up a cutter gun was a bad person?
No. She was just doing what the soldier next to her was doing.
Who was doing what the soldier next to her was doing, and so on and so on. And I bet most of them, not all, but most, who made it through the war spent a long time after trying to understand what they'd done. Wondering how they ever could have done it in the first place. Wondering when killing became so comfortable.
Rosemary's freckled cheeks had gone a little pale. He could see her throat move as she swallowed.
All you can do, Rosemary, all any of us can do, is work to be something positive instead. That is a choice that every sapient must make every day of their life. The universe is what we make of it. It's up to you to decide what part you will play. And what I see in you is a woman who has a clear idea of what she wants to be.
Rosemary gave a short laugh. Most days I wake up and have no idea what the hell I'm doing. He puffed his cheeks.
I don't mean the practical details. Nobody ever figures those out. I mean the important thing. The thing I had to do, too.
He made a clucking sound. He knew she would not understand it, but it came naturally. The sort of sound a mother made over a child learning to stand.
You're trying to be someone good.